Well, what is going on in the world today? Much has continued as normal, but an awful lot has changed. And whatever your ideas are around what's happening today, the one thing you can't do is avoid it. Because the situation we're in at the moment is a very real situation. We live in a real world with real highs and real lows. But nobody really believes that this is all there is. Everybody can imagine something better, and everybody wants something better, because everybody knows really that there is something better. We all know that this can't be it. That this world has a problem, that it's not what it ought to be, and we long for it to be better. And we know that we have a problem, that we are not what we should be, and we need to be better. We want everything made better, but how? What hope is there? We are dying people in a dying world, and we desperately want it to be fixed. We think if only life were different, if only things went better, if only these bad things in my life were not there. Do you know, the good news of the gospel is this: you want everything to be made better. Well, so does God. God wants it way more than you and me do. And his plan is an even better one than what we would plan. That's why Jesus came. Jesus came into this world because we have a problem, and he came to deal with it. And in the story that we listened to just a moment ago, we see Jesus Christ come face to face with that problem. He stands at a graveside because his friend Lazarus has died. The story is set as a funeral, and with it comes all the emotion and the tragedy of any funeral you and I might have been to. Jesus is there, face to face with death. Now, we all die, but why do we die? Well, we die because we are cut off from the God who gives life, because we have rejected him. You see, it's only those who reject the God of life that die, and we all die. We try with all that we can to solve the problem we're in. We're dying people in a dying world, and we desperately want it put right, and we try all that we can to put it right. Maybe you've seen all sorts of things going on. Maybe you've been involved in them yourself. Climate change activism. We've got to stop our carbon emissions. Maybe you've had lifestyle changes, changes to your diet. Maybe you live in a zero waste household. And desperately, you just want to put things right. Maybe a phrase you've heard, or even a phrase you've used, is we need to save the planet. But it feels ironic because we can't even sort our own lives out. And still, we want to save the whole planet. We're always trying to avoid death, or at least delay the process of dying. Maybe you've bought all sorts of creams that will make you look 10 years younger. I don't want to burst anyone's bubble, but I don't think they work. Desperately, we want to be avoiding death. We try all sorts of things. But one of the things that our current situation shows us with this pandemic is really, ultimately, our lives are not in our own hands, no matter how much we'd love for them to be. We don't have complete control over our own lives. Things can come and can take that away. You see, we think we've got the answer to all these problems. We think we are the answer. But what if we are the problem? Our solutions, they're all well and good. I don't want to knock them. They're good things to do to try and make this world a better place. But those solutions, they cannot fix our deepest problem. You see, the real problem is not our circumstances, the things that happen to us, the situations we find ourselves in, or what other people might do. The real problem is not our circumstances, but our hearts. That's where the problem lies. There's a young woman by the name of Greta Thunberg. She's been famous recently for talking about climate change activism. She went to the United Nations and gave a speech, and it was very moving. Greta, the teenage climate activist, she's a very impressive person. She's done something quite incredible, quite admirable in many ways. Well, she said this at that meeting to those people who were involved and in power. She said, "If you understand the situation and fail to act, you would be evil." And I refuse to believe that. Do you know, to some extent, I agree with her. That if we were to really see what needs to change and what we need to do to change, not just the whole world, but our own lives, if we could see the change that needs to happen and we would choose not to do it, we would be evil. But unlike Greta, I don't find that quite so hard to believe. And I don't find it hard to believe that we really are evil, deep within our hearts, mainly because I know my own heart. I know the things that come out of it. I know the things that I feel, the bitterness I hold, the twisted thoughts that I think. I know what goes on inside my own heart, and I don't find it at all hard to believe that there is wickedness and evil within it. I know my own heart. Do you? You see, the problem isn't just out there. The problem is in here, in my heart. Isn't it in your heart too? You see, our problem is that from deep within our hearts, we have rejected God. And that is personally offensive to Him. I want you to imagine being rejected yourself. Pouring all your love into someone and them just throwing you away. That's what sin is. When we use that word sin, it means that we have personally offended God by rejecting Him from our hearts. He's a good God, and walking away from Him is the source of all our problems. We've offended Him, but because we've cut ourselves off from Him, the one who gives life, the result is death and decay. You see, our hearts are dead to God. And our hearts need to come alive again. But how on earth could that happen? Dead things don't come back to life, do they? We're dead to God. But Jesus came to save from sin and death and hell. He came to provide a solution to our greatest problem, the problem of the sin that is within us. He came to give a solution to that problem. What is the solution? What does He offer? And how can I get it? How can I have it? I desperately want my sin to be dealt with. I desperately want my heart to be changed. I desperately want to have a hope for the future and for eternity. How can I get it? What does he give? And he says in this story that what he gives is himself. I am the resurrection and the life. It's me. Jesus says, I can deal with your dead heart. I can take your sin away. I can save you from hell and judgment. I can give you hope forever. I can change your heart and make it new. Jesus says, I am the resurrection and the life. I am the answer to this great problem that is within you. Now remember, Jesus first said this at a funeral. Lazarus, his friend, had been buried for 4 days. If you like, he's not just dead, he's proper dead. And he's in a tomb, which is like a cave cut out of the rock. And he's inside that, and there's a stone rolled against it to seal it. And all those around him, including his two sisters, are grieving. It's a hopeless situation. If ever you've been to a funeral, you'll know that gut-wrenching feeling of, oh, this is awful. That's where Jesus is. Now, at a funeral, there's certain things you do and you don't do. And one of the big rules at a funeral is that you don't draw attention to yourself. It'll only cause more grief. You never draw attention to yourself at a funeral unless you can actually help. I've never been to a funeral that's gone that badly, thankfully, but I have been to a wedding where something like this happened. Weddings and funerals are different in many ways, but there's similar emotions running quite high. And I remember going to a wedding once of some friends of mine. And during the course of the wedding, it was all going well. It looked lovely within the church building. There were bows tied on all the chairs and they were put out nicely. And the bride came in and the wedding had started. And as the vows were being taken, all of a sudden, someone in the front starts shaking and collapses in the middle of the room. And the pastor had to try and calm everyone down, and he did a great job, to be fair. But all of a sudden, all the chairs were ripped out of the way, and this woman lay on the floor. No one knew what to do. The worst thing you could have done in that situation would be to get up and say, "Everyone, look at me." But all of a sudden, that's pretty much what happened. A man ran from the back of the church building towards the front, and he said, "Everyone, out of the way. I'm a doctor." You see, if I'd done it, it would have been absolutely ridiculous, quite offensive and rude, but he did it. And because he could actually help, well, then it made sense. Then it was right that all attention should turn to him, that everyone should get out of his way and let him do his thing. Jesus turns up to a funeral and he draws all the attention to himself. I am the resurrection and the life. Because he can help. Jesus sees this hopeless situation and he says that he can help. He says, the answer is me. Look to me. Jesus says that if you really want life, you must come to him. What is it that you live for? Whatever it is, does it last longer than you do? Because if it doesn't, you're in trouble. Jesus says, come to me and have from me real life, lasting, joyful life. Come to me. And having made that great statement, Jesus goes along to see the grave. And as he's walking along, he groans. He groans. Have you ever felt that, where you're just so overwhelmed by the sadness of life, you just, no words are good enough. Jesus sees this situation and he groans. He groans for a number of reasons. He groans because he sees firsthand the reality of sin and death that comes from it, and he hates it. He groans also because of his own personal loss. We're told a number of times in that story that Lazarus is someone who Jesus loved. But he also groaned because he could see the people around him weeping hopelessly. And he saw their unbelief and he groaned. You see, it's right to be sad at a funeral. Jesus himself was very sad. But not to be hopelessly sad. And Jesus, you see, he learns here and shows us how to grieve with hope. And when he sees the unbelief of the people around him, how they grieve so hopelessly, he groans because he realizes it's not just Lazarus who's dead, but these people are all dead without him because they don't know him and trust him. And so he groans. And you know, today, he still groans at your unbelief. He sees that you're not trusting him. And he wants you to trust him. He wants to give you this life if only you would come to him. And so he groans for you. But his grieving increases throughout this story. Because as he actually sees the grave, he starts to cry. He's just overwhelmed with sorrow. And so he says, take away the stone. Surely not. That's outrageous. That's like going to a funeral today and saying, dig up the coffin and crack it open. Surely not. But they do it. And when they do it, Jesus looks up and he prays. He doesn't look around at the people who are there with him. He doesn't look down into the grave where Lazarus is. He looks up. Because that's where life is going to come from. Those people could do nothing to help. That was made very clear. And if Lazarus was going to get up from the dead, there's nothing Lazarus was going to do about it. But Jesus knows that life comes from God, and so he looks up. I wonder, will you look up? I'll tell you this, if you want life, this real life, there's no good looking around at other people. You're not going to get it from there. There's certainly no point looking within yourself because you won't find it there. Our hearts are dead and cut off from God without the help of Jesus Christ. Don't look around. Don't look in. Will you look up? Look up to God and ask him to help you. But then Jesus, having done that in this story, then he really goes too far. Because he looks into that grave and he says, Lazarus, come out. How embarrassing. But then Lazarus does come out. The man who was dead, not just dead, proper dead, 4 days dead. He was dead, but now he's alive again. And from then on in the story, this man Lazarus is identified not as the dead man, but as the man who was dead, but is now alive. Do you know, that's how everyone who belongs to the Lord Jesus Christ is identified. Because that's how Jesus Christ is identified. He identifies himself as the one who lives. He was dead, but now he's alive forevermore. You see, this is true of Jesus and for all who belong to Jesus. Jesus died. He didn't have to die. He didn't have an evil heart. He only loved God perfectly. No, he died for me. He died for my sin. He took the evil of my heart and he died for me. But then he didn't stay dead. He rose again from the dead, and now he lives forever. And because he is alive, I live because I trust in him and him alone. I was dead. I was cut off from God once. If you're listening into this and you're far off from God, you're cut off from him, you're dead in your heart. Let me tell you this, I was too. I was cut off from God and there was nothing good in me that turned my life around, but God reached in to a dead man's heart and made me alive again. I was dead, but now I am alive and I know God and I will live with God forever. Do you know, that can be true for you too. So let me ask you, what is the defining feature of your life? Is it this? Is it that you were dead, but now you are alive? What do you live for? What is your greatest hope? Is it this? That Jesus Christ, who died and rose again, has transformed you, has made you new, and do you know that you are his forever? So what is the hope of the world? We live in a messed up world. We've got messed up hearts. What hope is there? Let me tell you, there's no other hope than Jesus Christ. When you see this messed up world and you realize how messed up your own heart is, how are you going to respond? Will you trust yourself to make it right? How's that gone so far? Will you place your trust in other people? What's to say they won't let you down? Or will you trust in Jesus Christ, who himself has died and risen again? Trust him. He can help. He can save you. Trust him.